The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
President Joe Biden will meet with Pope Francis for the first time during his presidency on October 29th. According to the White House, the President of the United States will be accompanied by First Lady Jill Biden during his visit to the Vatican. The press statement says the Pope and the President will discuss working together on efforts grounded in respect for fundamental human dignity, including ending the COVID-19 pandemic, tackling the climate crisis, and caring for the poor. It will not be the first time Joe Biden visits the Vatican. In their first telephone conversation after Biden was elected president, he assured Pope Francis of his desire to collaborate on issues including caring for the marginalized and the poor, addressing the crisis of climate change, and welcoming and integrating immigrants and refugees.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. That's great news, I think. I really do. It's good to be with you today. The White House announcing that the president will be meeting with Pope Francis at the end of this month. Let's pray for that meeting with our president and the Holy Father, that it will be both fruitful and impactful. Yeah, I was sitting here as I got word of that news a couple days ago, and I was thinking to myself as I heard that audio run, this really is the fruit of our prayer. Now, you said, oh, many presidents have met the Pope. But here's what's different. Here's just my own take on this. And again, take it for what it is, for what that's worth. Archbishop Cordiglione, the great Archbishop of San Francisco, has started a national prayer campaign to pray for the conversion of our elected leaders, in particular his own member of his own flock, Nancy Pelosi, who's the Speaker of the House. And he also expanded that, as you'll hear on the Relevant Radio Network here, to pray for the conversion of the hearts of those in Congress. That prayer is not just limited to the houses of Congress. It's not limited to our Congress people or our senators. I believe it's extended to all who hold the noble office. And Joe Biden, former senator, now holds the highest office in the land and head of the executive branch. And I think prayers change things. I do. Father Rocky, as you know, has been praying the rosary every evening for an end to the culture of death. Who are the biggest opponents to that outside of Planned Parenthood, right? Whose mission it is to profit off of that, off the culture of death. Two very prominent Catholics, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, right? The head of the executive branch, the Speaker of the House. And President Biden has vowed to throw the weight of the federal government against the state of Texas for the heartbeat bill. We've seen where all that's heading. And we can get angry, we can get frustrated, and we can get disenchanted with him. We can be ashamed as a Catholic that, you know, he embraces the moniker of Catholic when he doesn't live his life as a Catholic. But I think we got to put all that aside. We just have to pray for him. And I believe so deeply, and I hope you know that by now, how much I am convinced of the transforming power of prayer to bring about conversion. And the fact that the president and the First Lady will be visiting the Vatican, having an audience with His Holiness on the 29th of October. That's good news. Let's pray that Pope Francis will have an impact on him. You know, they're going to discuss working together on efforts grounded in respect for fundamental human dignity, right? And I think, well, what does that mean? The first thing that comes to my mind is life, right? And of course, that includes COVID-19 and tackling climate and tackling, you know, the issue on our border, caring for the poor. I mean, there's a lot of other issues outside of life that they'll be addressing. But that's the top of my list. This visit comes, just for a little perspective, on the backdrop of growing tensions between Joe Biden, you know, our nation's second Catholic president, by the way, and a number of Catholic leaders in America. I mean, a lot of bishops have found themselves engaged now in numerous confrontations with the White House since the president took office in January. Much of the conflict revolves around what? You know what it revolves around. It revolves around the issue of abortion, with Biden supporting abortion more strenuously than he ever did before assuming power, while also emphasizing his own Catholic faith, you know, holding his rosaries and going to his Sunday Mass. And again, I'm not here to throw stones at him. And I don't think we should ever do that. I think we have to pray for him. It'd be great if he and Nancy Pelosi and some of these other so-called Catholics had a profound conversion, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, man, that would be just, it would be incredible. You know, last week, Archbishop Joseph Nauman, he heads up the U.S. Bishops Pro-Life Committee. He rebuked the president. He came out and it's not me that's saying this. This is what Archbishop Nauman said. He says he likes to call himself a devout Catholic. And I would argue, or I would urge, he says, urge him to begin to act like one, especially on the life issues. And I know I butchered his line there, but that's such a great line. He likes to call himself a devout Catholic, Nauman said. Quote, I would urge him to begin to act like one, especially on the life issues. Yeah, it doesn't get any more simple than that, right? The spokeswoman for President Biden, Jen Psaki, she regularly defends the president as a devout church-going Catholic, just as she regularly rebuffed appeals from bishops on behalf of the unborn. But as I said, our bishops are doing something about it. They're calling for prayer. They're calling out the administration. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, they actually voted earlier this year to begin drafting a document clarifying what the church's teaching is and how to appropriately receive communion. And look, you tune into my program because you want to look at what's unfolding in the world. At least I hope you do that and one through the eyes of our faith. I also try to give you a look at what's coming. And you mark my words, you can mark this date. Starting in 2022, you're going to hear a lot more talk about the Eucharist. And I think a document that would clarify what the church teaches about how we're all, how we should all receive the Eucharist, not just Joe Biden or Nancy Pelosi, how we should appropriately receive the communion. I think the bishops are on this stuff because if it applies to them, it's going to apply to us, right? So it's speculated right now that this document could include a reiteration of the church's position on political leaders who identify as Catholic, but they publicly dissent. They publicly support abortion. And some bishops have stated that they shouldn't receive communion. So we'll see. Final thought on this. And again, pray for Joe Biden. The 29th, he will meet with the president. That gives us several days to really pray for the encounter to be rich and holy, maybe even, he'll be meeting with the Pope. I just pray that it will be a transforming event for him. You know, the Holy Father's been clear on where he stands. I know not everybody's a fan of the Holy Father. Some people think he's too liberal. Some people don't like him for whatever reason, right? He has never vacillated when it comes to the issue of life. You know, he has never. I think we should really reflect on what he has said. I mean, he's called abortion murder. Doesn't get any more clear than that. And he has drawn the analogy, the example, if you will, of hiring a hitman to solve one of your problems. He says that's the same thing with abortion. I always thought that was such a great way of looking at it. Anyway, I don't want to go on too long. We'll talk much more about it as he gets closer to that visit. But I just want to say pray. I know we get angry. I know we get upset. I know we don't always agree with certain things that go down. But I just invite you to pray. I do, because it'll water those seeds in the heart of the president. It'll water the seeds of conversion in Speaker Pelosi. It'll water the seeds of conversion in your own life and that of your children. So it's such an important thing to do. And I hope it doesn't sound trite. I believe it, and that's why I say it often. Hey, I've been following something for you. I'll continue to follow it just to keep it on your radar. The U.S. Bishops Conference, USCCB, they reported again, there have been more acts of vandalisms against churches. And, you know, the Bishops Religious Freedom Committee, they launched a campaign of short videos as a response to these, as a response to the church vandalism. And I really have got to, Maggie, maybe I'll get you to put some of these up, maybe once a day, or we'll put a few of these videos up. They launched a campaign called Beauty Heals. And there's something about beauty, isn't there? Unfortunately, we have seen, and look, I would dismiss one or two or three or four or five random acts of somebody who's not mentally stable or balanced or whatever the issue is. But there have been more than 100 acts of vandalism, arson, other destructive type of behavior just since May of 2020. Now, I was sitting here getting ready for the broadcast, and I thought to myself, and this is no means to diminish any other faith or denomination, but I thought if 100 Jewish synagogues around the country were vandalized, right? If there was arson attacks, if there was violence, if there were horrible things scrawled on the buildings of these synagogues or, you know, mosques, don't you think the mainstream media would be all over this saying, oh my gosh, you know, they'd go through this whole thing, anti-Semitic, you know, hatred is manifesting, or who knows what their line would be. And this is not to diminish that. I would be with them on that. I'd be saying the same thing. It's wrong. I don't care whether it happens to a mosque, it happens to a Jewish synagogue, or to a Catholic church. I just wish that there was some fairness in the covering of it. But there's an animus, a hatred towards the Catholic Church. And the incidents that have occurred range from the tragic really to the obscene. You know, I want to be careful about how much I say about what they did to some of these places. But, let me do this. Yeah, let me give you a brief clip from CBS Miami on some of the latest vandalism that's happening beginning in October. Just listen to this.
For now, the second time, someone targeted a statue at Jesus at St. Martha's Catholic Church in Miami Shores. September 13th, the pastor found the head, arm, and hand all broken off of one of the statues. Then a month earlier, August 29th, someone damaged the Christ statue in front of the church. The church says the statues are worth thousands of dollars and one of them cannot be fixed. Miami Shores police are investigating and they're asking anyone with any information to give them a call at 305-471-8477.
All right, so that's Miami. As I was saying, it's happening all over the country, all over the country. I won't belabor this point too much, but as I said, they range from some mild attacks to pretty obscene attacks, from transparent to really inexplicable. And His Excellency, or His Eminence, I should say, Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York, and also the Archbishop of Oklahoma, Paul Coakley, they said something I thought was so profound. They summarized this. They simply said, these acts underscore that our society is in sore need of God's grace. It's so true, isn't it? Our society is in sore need of God's grace. I heard a story earlier today, and I'll probably talk about it tomorrow in greater length. There was a woman who was on a SEPTA train, and she was raped. And during that assault, not one person, and there were people, they had video footage of, surveillance footage, I guess, from inside the train or wherever this was occurring. Not one person called 911. Not one person stood up and did something. Now, I know it's terrifying. If I saw somebody doing that, I don't care if I was outnumbered, I would get up, even if I was injured in the process, to try to defend that person. The trauma that woman went through. And I thought, this is what happens in a culture, in a society that rejects God and rejects the dignity of the human person. And I think Archbishop Coakley, Cardinal Dolan, they hit it on the head when they said, our society is in sore need of God's grace. The U.S. Bishops Religious Liberty Conference, and I've been talking about religious liberty with you for a while. Also, the Bishops Domestic Justice and Human Development Committee have been tracking this now, as I said, since May of last year, and they found over 100 incidences in 29 states, and they include everything from graffiti being sprayed on church walls to statues being beheaded and smashed and gravestones desecrated, swastikas painted on things, arson. You know, some of the phrases that were put on this cathedral basilica in Denver, on the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception, they scroll the words, Satan lives here, or child rapist, LOL. You know, laugh out loud is what that stands for. White supremacists was the other word. And it goes on, and where they said, Jesus, and they put in parentheses, loves abortion. Bands off our bodies, no hanger, no wire hangers ever. That's what was on a parish in Boulder, Colorado. And look, they go on and on. I don't want to go too far into it. You get the point, right? There was devastating fires at certain churches. People were driving into them. But here's the final point on this, and I'll move off it, because I think it's a challenge for us as Christians, as followers of Christ. Here's what the bishops have said, and I just think this is so great. Not only are we in sore need of God's grace, but they say in all these cases, we must reach out to the perpetrators with prayer and forgiveness. Man, that's hard to do, isn't it? That is so hard to do. I mean, I preach mercy. I preach forgiveness. I'll never forget the day my son, and I shared this story with you before. He was watching a basketball game with some of his buddies. He was down in some city that he was living in at the time, and it was late. The game was over, and he was walking home. Two guys pull up in a black Beamer, and they get out, and he goes, oh, man, that's a really nice car. I don't know whether they misinterpreted what he said, thought he was mocking him. They came up, and they pummeled him. He said with the butt of a gun, he got smashed in the face. I got a call from him in the wee early morning of wee hours of the night, I should say. It was late at that time. I could barely understand a word because his jaw had been broken. He was on his way to the hospital at that point in time. And you know what happened within me? My Italian blood boiled. My anger rose. I wanted vengeance. I wanted justice. I wanted to curse and hurt and get vengeance on the person that had wounded my son like that. As a father, I became very defensive, very protective. And it took a lot of effort for me to instead, as much as I wanted to curse and pray that they get the same thing, I prayed for those perpetrators. I offered forgiveness, even though I didn't feel it. I didn't feel the forgiveness in my heart, but I knew that I was called to do, and I did pray. And that's what our bishops are saying when we see these. And this goes for your own life. Maybe you've been raped. Maybe somebody stole from you. Maybe somebody swindled you out of your money and your business. Maybe somebody hit and ran. You know, who knows? Maybe you've been falsely accused of something. We don't have to forget, but we can forgive, right? And we are called to pray. Where the motive was, we have to reconcile is kind of the bottom line here. So anyway, the Bishops Freedom Committee has launched this campaign called Beauty Heals. It's a campaign of short videos in response to the vandalism. And as I said, I've been covering the story, and I will continue to keep you up to speed on the latest and all that is happening there. Hey, in other news, the Supreme Court, another story I've been following for you, and I just want to bring you up to speed on this. There was a commission set forth. You know, Joe Biden, when he ran years ago when he was a senator, this issue was floated, and he called it this. He says, it's a boneheaded idea. That's what he said. He called it a boneheaded idea, right? So the president, when he took office, again, they know that the court right now is conservative. We do know that Roe v. Wade will fall, and I hope you'll join Father Rocky in the evening to pray the rosary for that intention. Join me for the chaplet coming up here in about a half an hour or so, an hour, and we'll pray for that cause as well. But the president formed a commission, and he wanted them to explore the expansion of the Supreme Court, and he wanted to know what the real risks of adding justices to the bench would be, and they have come back right now with a preliminary report. Again, this is a bipartisan Supreme Court commission. And they agreed that Congress, they can legally expand the Supreme Court. And if you do that, that's known as court packing. Right now we have 9, you can go to 13, 15, whatever, but they're afraid of whatever administration comes in. If the court's too conservative, they'll make it liberal. If it's too liberal, it'll become, and these are lifetime appointments. How big does the court get? So what did the panel say? They said, legally, you have the right to do this. There's nothing that prohibits this. But the panel was at odds of whether or not the expansion was wise. The risk of court expansion, they said, was considerable. It included that the fact that it could undermine the very goal of some of its proponents of restoring, you know, court's legitimacy. Some commissioners agree with some of the reasoning behind expanding the court beyond 9 justices. Other commissioners think that an expansion is likely to undermine, rather enhance, the Supreme Court's legitimacy, its role of in the constitutional system. And they said that, look, any lawmaker contemplating Supreme Court reform, they should be aware that the pursuit of immediate court expansion would involve taking a position in a partisan contest, which would be deeply divisive. And I think they're right. I think they're so right. I mean, even the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she basically said, it's fine where it was. Breyer, Supreme Court Justice Breyer, who's liberal-leaning as well, he weighed in on this concept of Supreme Court packing in an NPR interview that he did. Listen to what the Supreme Court Justice Breyer said.
Saying here, too, what goes around comes around. And if the Democrats can do it, the Republicans can do it. And therefore, beware, be careful.
And that's the bottom line. Yeah, that is the bottom line. Be careful. Okay, you could do it now. But what happens when you no longer hold the majority? I say we leave it alone. You know, votes have consequences. I say that all the time. You know, when Donald Trump was running, everyone knew that he had the ability to nominate 3, maybe 4 Supreme Court justices, and we know what he did. You know, Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh. We saw what, 3 Supreme Court picks out of 3 Supreme Court nominations, and what he did also at other levels in the judiciary. I say it all the time: when you go into that voting booth, you're not just voting for the person. You know, you're not voting for Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or whoever the candidate of the day may be. You're voting for much, much more. And it has consequences. I think we're seeing that today in our own country, don't you? You'd agree, I hope. I mean, take a look at some of the policies that have been enacted right now and where we are, just in terms of when certain policies get enacted, whether you're liberal or conservative. Let's take liberal, for example. Take a look at our inflation. Take a look at the economy. Take a look at some of the mandates. Take a look at some of the issues on our southern border. Take a look at life. I mean, there's so many different things that are unfolding right now that I hope you'll take pause next time you go in and you vote. One other follow-up for you, and then we'll take a few calls. Superman. I talked about gender-neutral toy aisles not too long ago, right? And I also mentioned to you the other day that, DC Comics has Superman now coming out as bisexual, right? I was saying to my wife the other day, and look, I love everyone. I do. You're my brother. You're my sister. I just don't know why we always have to lead with sexuality. And I don't know what's wrong with heterosexuality. Why can't a character be heterosexual, right? What's so wrong with the love interest between Lois Lane and Superman, right? I mean, it's part of the arc of that story, right? Well, and I won't go off on this, but I saw another story. Now they're changing the motto to Superman. We're changing Superman's motto. You remember that? It was, truth and justice in the American way. I think that was what it was for a long time. They thought about changing it, or they are going to change it. The new mission statement is truth, justice, and a better tomorrow. That's the new line. And this is supposedly, the company said, to better reflect the storylines that we're telling, to honor Superman's incredible legacy over 80 years of building a better world. Truth and justice, they're central. They're iconic to this superhero, right? But apparently the American way has fallen out of favor. Now, I was saying to my wife, I was watching the news early this morning, and you still see this crisis on the border, right? They estimate maybe 1 million people have come across the border in the you don't see that in China or Cuba or North Korea or Venezuela or Russia or any other nation, do you? People come here because they value our principles and they love the American way. They know that anything is possible here in this great country. Anything is possible. 8 months ago, an issue of DC Comics, it was Batman/Superman number 16th, I was reading earlier today, said that the Superman's mantra is truth, tolerance, and justice. They throw the word tolerance in there. And I'm thinking, tolerance? I mean, we've become so tolerant that we've become intolerant, haven't we? It's unbelievable. But that's just the latest of Superman. We'll keep you up to speed. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk much more. We got a lot to get into. And I've got something that I want to bring you up to speed on. Relevant's got a great, great opportunity for you. And fill you in on that right after I return. Stay with me.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show is live. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter any time of the day. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Pope Francis has approved the beatification of Albino Luciani, better known as Pope John Paul I. The miracle attributed to his intercession is the scientifically inexplicable healing of a girl in Argentina who suffered from a brain disease.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I'll tell you about that coming up. Good afternoon. In about 30 minutes, too, we'll pray for some miracles here on the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. You've got about 30 minutes. Please tell somebody else about the prayer. Have them join us. They can stream us at relevantradio.com or on the mobile app or, of course, on the station you're listening to. We'll pray together for what is, I think, one of the more powerful moments of my day. Great to be back here with you today. Before we change gears, Monsignor Hilary Franco is going to be stopping by. I just want to put something on your radar. Speaking of prayer, the chaplet, the month of November that's coming up. By the way, if you signed up for the Nativity, unbelievable. Thank you. We've had an unbelievable response to that. Amazing. Really just an amazing turnout. You will soon be notified Now, whether or not you have won, all right? You will find out whether or not you've won because today's the day that the winners are drawn. But on another note, you know, and I'm really honored to broadcast for this network, a network where I can give you a look at life. I can discuss news and issues. We can take a look at everyone from the popes to our political leaders. But I'm also honored to be able to pray with you, and I'll do that in 30 minutes. Relevant Radio as a family, we're joining together in a very beautiful novena for our departed loved ones. And you know, it's really tragic. So often we forget those who've gone before us. I mean, I know we mourn their loss, and it's a deep wound for many. But sometimes with time, life in the present moment, things begin to dim. And maybe you don't pray as fervently, as frequently, or as often as you should for that loved one that has gone before you. November is right around the corner. Literally, we're days away. And it's the month that you remember the Holy Souls. And I hope you'll join us. A novena is going to kick off on November 2nd. It's going to run through November 10th. Mark your calendar. It's a novena for your departed loved ones. All right? And we're going to pray the chaplet. You're going to pray the family rosary. And they're going to be remembered in Mass. So if you said, I know I should buy a Mass, but I'm kind of broke, or I keep forgetting to have Masses said, why not join us November 2nd through the 10th as we pray a novena, a nine-day novena, for that loved one in your life, those loved ones in your life who passed away. They'll be remembered in the power of the Mass. There's nothing more powerful than the celebration of the Mass. They'll be remembered in the chaplet and during the rosary. And all you have to do is go to relevantradio.com and use the /souls, okay? relevantradio.com/souls, and you can submit the names of your deceased loved ones and your family today. That's all. Put all their names down there. Okay, I'm doing it. My wife and I said when we got our email this morning reminding us of this, I said, oh, we definitely have got to do that. So whether you've known just a few holy souls or maybe there's a lot of people who've gone before you, relevantradio.com/souls. All right, and then together as one big spiritual family, we'll pray together. We'll ask for God's mercy on them. And I know that those prayers, those masses, those chaplets, those rosaries will have a profound impact on mitigating their purgation and ultimately alleviating it. And perhaps by your prayers and mine, and many souls will be released in the paradise. Hopefully those you love. All right. Hey, on some other news here very quickly. I just saw a report that Pope John Paul I, he is heading for beatification, right? He was known as a smiling pope. And if you're familiar, I think he reigned, what, 33 days? It was crazy. He died very unexpectedly on September 28, 1978, after just 33 days in office. And prior to his short pontificate, he was carrying forward the work of the Second Vatican Council. He was very passionate about it. Before he was elected pope, he was, as you heard in that audio clip that Maggie played, Albino Luciani. He was known for incredible virtue. He was known for his humility, his emphasis on spiritual poverty, his dedication to teaching the faith in an understandable manner, makes it a kind of a patron of ours here at Relevant Radio. That's always a challenge. You want to teach the faith in a way that everyone can comprehend and embrace and see the beauty of. Well, the Pope gave approval on October 13th for the cause of his beatification, along with six other people on the path to sainthood. And as you were hearing a little bit earlier, there was a great miracle that took place that led to his canonization. And I say it all the time. I mean, we pray and we see the fruit of the prayer, don't we? We see how God can work. And this particular story dealt with a woman who was the healing of an 11-year-old girl, actually, not even a woman. She was a girl at the end of her life. She had very severe acute inflammatory. I think she had encephalopathy, if I remember correctly. Her body was going into septic shock as well. I mean, she was dying. I mean, there was not a whole lot of hope. Her situation was really serious, and she had these seizures all the time. And she went into a septic bronchopneumonia, and the initiative, you know, went underway to pray to Pope Paul I, or John Paul I, I should say, and she was miraculously cured. It's an amazing story. I'll share more with you coming up on that. But we know after his passing, none other than the great John Paul II became our pope in 1978. And it was really the pope of my lifetime. I vividly remember him. I met him on two occasions. And what a gift he has been. I'm joined right now by somebody who has known in a very personal way John Paul I. It's a delight to have with me today Monsignor Hilary Franco. He's a priest of the Archdiocese of New York. And by the way, he's got a new book out, and we'll talk about this as well. He wrote a book called Six Popes, A Son of the Church Remembers. And he served as an advisor of the Holy See to the United Nations and served for years as assistant to the none other than the great Archbishop, soon to be beatified, Fulton J. Sheen. And he served for him under him for about 24 years. And I want his take also on, you know, what Sheen would say right now about what's unfolding in the world, especially with China. But Monsignor, welcome. It's good to have you with me this afternoon. Good afternoon.
It is so wonderful to be with you and to follow you. I mean, you mentioned people that I know, that I have known, that I have worked for, especially you mentioned the future blessed, you know, John Paul I. And, you know, Albino Luciani was elected, actually. When he was elected, I was present at his election as pontiff. And I will never forget, you know, 33 days after that, you know, I at that time I was living, actually, working in Rome at the Vatican, 26 years in the Vatican. And one of my colleagues, Villa Stritch, said to me, you know, well, you know, the Pope is dead. That morning, I'll never forget. I said, "Wait a minute! The Pope died, you know, on the 6th of August." I said, "That was St. Paul the 6th," and he said, "No, it's the new Pope." And that was really a shock. I was present also at his funeral, and naturally later on at the installation of John Paul the 2nd, Saint John Paul the 2nd. By the way, I just came back from Poland last Wednesday. And you were mentioning the chaplet. You know, I was in Poland on the guiding a pilgrimage on the occasion of the 100th anniversary of John Paul II's birth. It was supposed to be last year, but because of COVID-19, was postponed until this year. So we just finished this beautiful. Wow. I said Mass at the Shrine of Divine Mercy, and I said Mass all over. You know, we were in Warsaw, we were in Krakow, and it was so moving. Even though I had been there many times, especially with the St. John Paul II, you know, but in the past, you know, but this time was really made the difference. We prayed the chaplet. As you were saying, it's so essential that we pray. We pray for miracles. They do happen. Our Lord told us very clearly, if you ask and you will receive, you ask and the door will be open to you. Why don't we do it? Sometimes I want it. But anyhow,
I'm at
your disposal.
I love it. I love your passion, Monsignor, and I'm with you. I think Poland is such an anointed place. One of the best pilgrimages of my life was there. Because you not only have John Paul II, you have the great St. Faustina. Of course, you have Maximilian Kolbe. There were so many great people who were heroic figures of the 20th century that God seemed to call forth from Poland. And I can't wait to go back there and pray again.
Well, we have the newest blessed, as you do know, two Saturdays ago, we had the blessed Stefan Wyszynski, whom I knew rather well when he used to come to our meetings in Rome, and also Jerzy Popielusko, and that's another great Polish priest, you know, who was actually killed by the communists at the time. It was in 1984. It was an incredible history that the Polish people have, you know. It was tremendous.
I'm going to share his story. I'm going to share his story tomorrow in greater detail.
Ahead.
He's one of my favorites. I prayed at his tomb, and I felt such a connection to him when I was there in Poland. Hey, Monsignor, you wrote a book called Six Popes, A Son of the Church Remembers. You included in there, did you include John Paul I, who's now on his way
of
to be beatified?
No, naturally. He's one of the six. He's one of the six.
So it was Paul the Sixth.
I mean, I'm starting with John the 23rd because, you know, not so much as a pope, but don't forget, I was as you do know, an expert at the most probably you know, at the Second Vatican Council, we were rather young, you know, and that's when I met a young auxiliary bishop of Krakow by the name of Karol Wojtyła. I don't know if you heard of him, you know. and that's how we began our friendship, you know, so it goes back to wow. those days. But the beautiful stories that I have about John the 23rd actually go back when he was nuncio in Paris, and he was Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli, and he used to come to the Roman seminary where I was preparing for the priesthood, you know, because I was sent there at the time the North American College was not in function because was being, you know, like they had after the war, they had some problems that there was some building, other things, you know, and we were sent to the Pontifical Roman Seminary. And that's since Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli was an alumnus of that seminary. He used to come he would entertain us with his stories. And that's what some of the stories that I have in my book, you know. And then actually, Albino Luciani was, as I said, you know, I was present when he was Patriarch of Venice. It was already, I had something to do with him. And then later on, actually, as Pope, even though it was a short pontificate. So we're very happy that we will have a new blessed. And I was waiting for that day because, you know, I had a special devotion to this humble, as you say, humble, pastorally inclined. That's what we need. We have to be near the people of God, and understand this. You were saying before, we have to make this faith being understood clearly by everyone. Unless you know what your faith is, wonderful work that you are doing, how can you put into action? There was another friend of mine by the name of Mother Teresa of Calcutta. she used to tell us, you know, the past is gone, the future is yet to come, and it's in the hands of God. What counts is the present. Let us begin now. That's, every minute counts because when the Lord will call us, we'll say, hey, at that particular time, you were on a great show from Green Bay, whatever, you know, and I have to know, you know, what he's inspiring me to
Monsignor, say. Let me ask you, how can people get your books? I know you feature Pope Francis and Benedict XVI and Paul VI and John Paul. How do people get connected to it?
I am so happy to say that we were number one on the Amazon list of new releases. It's incredible. It's really incredible, I have to say. And so Amazon is probably the best way of getting the book. You know, six popes attracts. I guess popes attracts, not so much what but those are my histories.
I love it. Histories with them. It's a great book for somebody's spiritual library, a wonderful insight into some of the great figures that have, you know, guided the church through some very dark decades in human history. On another note, I know you also served underneath of Archbishop Fulton Sheen. His cause is underway, and prayerfully he'll be beatified soon, hopefully this year. But, you know, I think about where we are today, Monsignor. And what we're seeing, not only in our country, but what we've seen in China and in the Soviet Union and other places.
Yeah.
And one of his big missions, I mean, he was so eloquent. He railed against socialism. And he says, look, it was alive and it's correct. Well, if he was alive today, what do you think he would say about the rising specter of socialism in our country and maybe even communism today?
Right. Let me tell you very clearly that this man actually was the mentor. You know, I have another book, as you do know, that I had written before based on 100 handwritten letters that he wrote to me until his death almost, you know, and I wasn't wrong. But I'm the last surviving member of the household of Fulton J. Sheen. We lived at 109 East 38th Street, wow. Even though our offices were on 366 Fifth Avenue. And his passion against communism was incredible. He knew the Constitution of the so-called Soviet Union at that time so well, wow, that he could, wow, actually quote it, you know, in so many different ways. Don't forget, we're talking about an audience. We had an audience. By the way, I was the angel erasing the blackboard, you know, just to give you an idea of, you know, we had an audience of about 40 million people. Perhaps, I don't know whether your audience is probably close to that number, you know, but it's, I hope it is. But 40 million people, they were listening. Not only that, but they were writing. So we had about 10,000 letters almost every week, even more than that, you know, and I had the 61 secretaries to respond, you know, because the bishop, wow, wanted to respond to each one of those. Amazing. Most of the letters would say, well, I have enjoyed your show, you know. As mm-hmm. you do know, we were on prime time, and someone by the name, a great singer, I don't remember if you probably, I'm sure you heard of him. His name was Frank Sinatra. He had to change his show. Yes. He had to change his time because he was on CBS and we were on ABC at that time. So here's the man that really, really, let's not forget that in 1950, 1 week before Stalin dies, he actually prophesied. It was an incredible television show where he said, you know, who knows, probably God will also take care of Joseph Stalin. And a week later, the man was dead. What I mean is, he had really this profound knowledge of communism, and naturally, John the 23rd was great because at one point he said, you know, I hate communism. I might love communists as human people, you know, and but Fulton J. Sheen, in his 72 bestsellers, if you go through, you will see how many times that he has really taught us that communism is one of the evils that we have in today's world.
Monsignor, I'm going to bring it back just so we can talk about that because it deserves so much more time. I love your passion and your energy and all that you have done. I want to make sure people get connected to your book. It's called Six Popes, A Son of the Church Remembers, written by Monsignor Hilary C. Franco. And you can get that, as he says, on Amazon. It was at the top of their list for a while. It's well worth the read. I have a copy of it. And Monsignor, you and I will get together again. I want to have you back. I really enjoyed sharing with you. Stay with me. I'll be back right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Your life connected.
It's re-evangelized and retaught
every day afterward.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, coming up in just a few minutes, we will pray the chaplet. If you want to join me, feel free to do that. It's 888-914-9149. You can get in, and I always take, you know, at least five or six calls. If we can squeeze them in there, you can post your intentions to Twitter at Drew Mariani Show. And, of course, email us, drew@relevantradio.com. Please send me your answer prayers, too. I mean, they really inspire me. And I prayed for you this afternoon at Mass. I went to the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help, and I prayed for you over the weekend there at the very site where the Mother of God appeared in the only church-approved apparition. So you're part of my family, and I really care about you. I think about you on a daily basis. In fact, I think about you as much as I do sometimes my own family members, and I'm always praying for you and for your needs. And I know you pray for me, at least I hope you do. If you haven't, if you could remember me with just a brief prayer or two every once in a while, I know that will have such a profound impact on me and on the intentions that I personally have. I would value and deeply appreciate that. So if you could do that, fantastic. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to pray the chaplet coming up here. But after the chaplet, I'm going to be joined by a woman named Esperancita. And a longtime friend of mine, she was a translator for me when I was down in South America. Her name is Kathy Chebley. She's now in Peru. We'll join her there. I want to bring you up to speed on not only the calls of Maria Esperanza, whose calls has been opened, but a lot of people have been writing me, hey, tell me about this encounter you had when you saw Maria Esperanza bilocate, or tell me about the apparitions there, or tell me about the church-approved miracle. There was a church-approved Eucharistic miracle that took place in Venezuela. And just to give you a quick thumbnail, I'll just give you a very quick summary of what happened. Maria Esperanza Medrano de Bianchini, that's her full name. She was a mystic in South America. She had the gifts that Padre Pio had. She could bilocate and levitate. She could read souls. She received the miraculous communion host on her tongue. She was visited by angels and saints. She was so respected by the local episcopate that she was even allowed to have the Eucharist in a chapel in her home, and competent eyewitnesses would see her levitating sometimes before it. I mean, just absolutely amazing. The Mother of God appeared to her and then appeared to the masses that were down there. I mean, hundreds of people saw her on March 25th, 1984, the very day that John Paul consecrates the world to the Immaculate Heart, fulfilling the Fatima apparition. The Virgin comes down there as the reconciler of peoples and nations. And from that day on, there are many, many people who witnessed the Mother of God during these particular apparitions. I received a healing from a spring that welled up there one day. I had a terrible eye infection came on me, and I'm down there with a production crew, and we're getting ready to film, and I can barely even open my eyes. I don't know what happened. Got something, you know, and it was in both eyes, and they were going to take me to the hospital, to a doctor, to get it taken care of. But we were already almost to the site there in Betania, Venezuela. And when the Mother of God would communicate to Maria Esperanza, she told her about this place that she would find. And she prophesied her visions that would occur there, and all these things happened. She talked about how this spring, this well, this cascade, if you would be like that, like the waters of Lourdes, France. And I went up with faith, and I put my hand in the water, and I flushed my eyes with this anointed oil, anointed water, this holy water, this blessed water, if you will. Nothing special about it. It flowed from the mountainside. And my eyes were miraculously cured. But it wasn't just me. During the filming, I spoke to several physicians. One was a doctor by the name of Dr. Arieta. The other was Dr. Vinicio Paz. And Dr. Arieta was suffering a tough situation. He's a Harvard-educated doctor, and he got cancer. You know, he had cancer, and he had cancer of the prostate. It spread to the lumbar column of his spine, and if you're a physician, his antigen level had been about 100 times where the normal level is, if the value is 0 to 10. And he received two treatments of chemotherapy, and there was no possibility of misdiagnosis. They had all the documentations. They gave him just a very short period of time to live. But he went, he spent all night praying at this shrine with his wife, and there was about a crowd of 5,000 people that showed up. It was the anniversary of Fatima. And at 5 in the morning, he woke, and he begged God, he begged him to let him live for his two children. And he said, God, I promise you, I will cast off my pride. I'll cast off my pretentiousness. You know, with wealth and with, you know, certain positions comes pride, right? And he vowed to disengage from this. Well, he got up at 6 in the morning. They broke their fast. They'd been fasting. They sang a song to the Virgin Mary. At 8 in the morning, there was what he describes as a solar phenomena, where the sun lost all of its light. It was illuminated, but it lost its light. He was able to look at it. It became green. It began to spin. He began to witness what he described like the miracle of the sun. And suddenly he felt an infusion of heat within his body. And he grabbed his wife. He began to scream. And she thought he was going crazy. He screamed, I'm being cured. I am being cured. I'm being cured. And that infusion arrived in his spinal column and went all the way down to his prostate. He says, I wasn't even looking at the clock. But after that, the Virgin appeared above the trees towards the heaven as a real human being. That's how people would see her, as a three-dimensional person. And she had hair that would move in the breeze, a face, he said, of extreme beauty. He says, you can't describe the beauty of what you see. All she had, she was a reflection of the love of God. And he began to pray. And he prayed his rosary. And he went to the doctor right after this. and he knew he was cured. 5 days later, that prostatic-specific antigen was not even detectable. And one of the specialists, this is a man who I interviewed, his name was Dr. Vinicio Paz. He's the one who made the original diagnosis. He said there is no scientific explanation for what occurred. They did a biopsy, and that biopsy, which showed he had cancer, also now negative. The cancer had simply vanished. The cancer was gone. A man given a death sentence, a Harvard-educated physician. You know, this is not a mistake. This is a miracle. This is a miracle. And I just want to say to you right now, as we're about to pray the chaplet, cancer is not bigger than God. Addiction is not stronger, greater, or longer lasting than God. With God, all things are possible. Dr. Vinicio Paz can testify to that. Dr. Arrieta can testify to that. We're going to pray the chaplet. After that, we're going to go. We'll talk a little bit about Venezuela, the calls for Maria Esperanza, and so much more. It's an amazing story. I know people are always asking me, can you share a little bit about it? I thought I'd do that with you today, all right? But right now, let's turn to the God of miracles, all right, where we see Harvard-educated physicians miraculously cured. There's no reason God cannot work that miracle that you're looking for in your life. Let's pray big. Let's trust big. And we'll do that when I return.